This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is John Devine. John is senior economist with Cotton Incorporated. He'll join us in just a few moments. First off, let's roll back to last week. Lance Honig is chief of USDA's crop branch with the National Ag Statistics Service, talking about overall expectations when it comes to crop acreage.
So on a percentage basis, you can see the durum wheat showing the largest increase, chickpeas showing the largest decrease. But if we go to the next slide and just put it in terms of acreage, here you can clearly see that the increases, largest increase by far, occurring in soybeans, the 3.76 million acre increase. But on the flip side, you can see the corn, as we talked about earlier, also down close to 4 million acres.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by John Devine. John is senior economist with Cotton Incorporated. John, we're coming off of some new numbers from USDA, and you know, it's kind of interesting. We start the month of January off usually with some preliminary estimates for acreage. Get into February, we get Cotton Incorporated's number. And by the end of March, we have USDA's projection for acreage estimates. And was there any surprise when you saw the number from USDA last week?
Well, I think there's been some push and pull all the way along. I mean, I think a lot of your listeners certainly be aware that we live in a very volatile and rapidly evolving world. You know, the situation when you take a look at, you know, when the National Cotton Council was collecting their responses back in December, we had, new crop futures that were still below $1. And then, you know, since then, prices have gotten a little bit better. Ukraine war took a little bit of wind out of the cotton market sales there for a little bit. But then I think people started realizing they needed to pay attention to acreage and also weather. So numbers started moving a little bit higher. And then, you know, we had a little bit of pushback, too, as corn prices and particularly wheat prices got a little bit better as well. So it's been back and forth. But when you take a look at where the numbers have been coming up and where they've been sticking on the dartboard, they've all been landing, you know, somewhere around 12 to 12 million acres and some change. So a little bit of scatter, certainly a lot of the developments out there, but the numbers are all coming in that will probably somewhere be, you know, between 12 and a half million acres, maybe a little bit higher than that.
So when we talk about planted acreage, obviously that's an important number. But another important number is how many acres will we actually harvest? So now we have to introduce this idea of abandonment. And we at this point would expect I'm just guessing here, a little higher abandonment based upon the very dry conditions across the high plains. Is that an assessment that we could run with at least a little ways down the road?
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting the nail right on the head there. I mean, acres planted is just one piece to the puzzle, and you know the weather will determine, you know, how that puzzle looks when it's all fit together. We still got a few months to see what the weather might bring us, but it has been dry out there in, you know, West Texas for past a few months, and we need some moisture out there to help to get those seeds germinated to help us get a crop made out there.
We've also been watching over the years our turnout, if you will, our yield increasing ever so slightly, a trend line that's moving higher. Is that something that continues that we can continue to see move higher? And again, I know that if we have a higher abandonment, we're talking about losing acres of dry land production, which probably pull that average down. But is that something we'll watch throughout the season as well?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so you do have, you know, abandonment that can take out some of what would have been our lowest yielding acres. So that potentially could have a boosting effect to yield per harvested acre. But the weather certainly will play a big role there. And, you know, as is true any season, we've got a lot of months to sort of sit and wait and see what Mother Nature brings us.
Part of what's driving the price higher, I would imagine here, is is the demand. And for cotton, we're talking about export markets. If I'm not mistaken, seems like 70 to 75% of the cotton sold last week was to China. So let's talk on the export side. What are you watching there?
Yeah, from the export side, sales have generally been good. China's been a big part of that. You know, China's come back in the game here for the past couple of crop years, which is great. You know, consumer demand here in the U.S. is strong, so that helps in the closing, you know, the downstream pull that we feel in the fiber market. But, you know, the big issue on the export side, of course, is shipments. You know, you talk to the cotton merchants, they say, you know, they'll tell you they've been struggling with logistical issues this whole year due to, you know, problems with trucking, problems with trying to find space on boats, trying to find containers. It's been a whole range of issues. And even though sales have been strong and demand has been relatively solid, our shipments this year are down about 35% year over year. You know, they're still hoping that we'll be able to catch up, but otherwise, you know, could be left potentially with some additional stocks in our warehouses. Normally, that could mean downward pressure on times, but on prices, but we are not in normal times. You know, with the shipping crisis, if we're unable to ship, I think that's an indication of scarcity rather than a surplus, and that could be a factor that has been supporting prices.
So we usually get those numbers on a weekly basis through USDA's weekly export sales report. So if we start seeing the shipments start ticking back up, could we see maybe some reductions in sales? So we'll see that on a week-to-week basis where maybe in a previous week, China, I don't know, bought a million something or other. And then the next week you'll see where they had a reduction of 500,000 somethings or whatever. I'm not going to say widgets in there, but the idea is we'll see those reductions. Is that something we will watch for in these weekly export sales to kind of tell us whether or not they're starting to get the shipments that they need?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we got to pay attention to, these weekly reports. And I think, you know, the shipments part of it may be more important than the sales part of it. This year, particularly this time of year this year. So to reach the current USDA export forecast of just under 15 million bales, we're going to need to be shipping 500,000 bales every single week if that's left in the crop year. And we haven't done that yet. So the pressure's on. Let me see if we can do it. And then, you know, at the end of the crop year, we are also hanging over merchants' heads. They have a, you know, a 20 cent per pound drop in the market. Let me take a look at this between July futures and December futures. So we've been experiencing a lot of volatility. I think the shipping crisis and the shipments and how things pan out for the rest of the crop year could be another factor contributing to volatility over the next few months.
And obviously, if we're talking exports, we are talking demand, but there are other things we're watching on the demand side as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, so I think one thing that's important to think about over the past couple of years or year or two is that the U.S. consumer has been showing up in a big way. Take a look at consumer spending on apparel. It's up 25% compared to, you know, same months back in 2019. So compared against pre-COVID, you know, we're up a quarter. Consumers are buying one quarter more clothing than they did back then. Nominal rates of growth are around 2%. So we've had very outsized growth in terms of consumer demand for clothing. Other places around the world haven't been quite as robust as us in terms of their growth in clothing spending, but the refilling of pipelines after the recession has also been a contributor to strength and demand. And while all of that has been very good, I think we also need to be a little bit cautious in terms of what might be coming down the pipe. We had record monthly increases in energy prices here over the past few months. That's going to pinch consumers, of course, here in the U.S., but also around the world. Food prices have been increasing dramatically as well. You take a look at food and energy. These are necessities. So the increased spending on necessities due to the increase in prices may pinch consumer clothing demand. And also, since demand has been so strong too, there could be some leveling off that also could turn into a little bit of a headwind as we get further down the road.
Okay, just a couple of minutes left. And again, you're the senior economist with Cotton Incorporated. There's a lot that goes on in that ag department side of Cotton Incorporated. What are some other things that you've kind of got on your agenda, or things that maybe it's not a front burner issue, but just things that you're watching right now? What's happening there?
Yeah, well, something that we've been watching that we're paying close attention to in our discussions, particularly with retailers and folks on the buying end of the supply chain, is, you know, what are they doing with these high cotton prices? You know, last time we went through this 10 years ago, the big issue for us was the loss in share. We lost about 10 percentage points in here in the U.S. apparel market to competing fibers. There is some concern about that this time around. But what we've been hearing from folks, you know, on the downstream end of the supply chain is that we haven't been hearing the same switching that we did about a decade ago. So I think, you know, that's something to be encouraged about. I think, you know, the arguments that cotton has on the sustainability front are resonating, you know, around the microfiber issue, and also around the fact, you know, that cotton truly is circular. You know, talking about dirt to shirt, and we can go back to dirt again if we need to. So I think, you know, something else we're watching, of course, is cotton share, and I think there's reason to be more positive about that than we were 10 years ago.
Okay, so if we want to keep up with what's going on at Cotton Incorporated, and I throw this out because I know that you've got some specific areas on the Cotton Incorporated website where you actually post some thoughts and some information. So where do we find that, and what can we find on that Cotton Incorporated website?
Sure. So we've got two sort of flagship publications in terms of economic work that we do. One is the monthly economic letter, simply where we summarize the monthly updates the USDA has made to supply and demand figures. We also bring you up to date on major developments around the world that could be affecting the cotton market and cotton prices. We also have an executive cotton update, which is a summary of macroeconomic conditions here in the U.S. and also globally, and what that might mean for apparel demand and therefore cotton demand. And then, of course, you know, we're always up on the news, too. There can be webinars and things from time to time. Cottonworks is a great place to check out some of those resources as well.
John Devine is senior economist with Cotton Incorporated. He joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Second best isn't good enough when it comes to your tractor's performance. You know it? We know it. That's why we run Fendt tractors. One test drive can show you the difference between a great tractor and a truly exceptional machine. Ready to set up a demo? Get behind the wheel of a Fendt to experience it for yourself and see why the best run operations run Fendt. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, John Devine with Cotton Incorporated.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early season nematodes, resulting in healthier seedlings and improved plant stands. Averland FC is the only ivermectin in-furrow solution registered for nematodes in cotton, and it's fully compatible with liquid fertilizers and other crop inputs. To learn more about Averland FC, talk to your retailer or go to vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Always read and follow label instructions.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
It's the Agribusiness Report. John Devine, our special guest today with Cotton Incorporated. Learn more online at cottoninc.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Dr. John Robinson's a Texas A&M AgriLife cotton marketing economist. Talks about the idea that foreign mills may be buying more than they really need.
Yeah, I've heard that very scenario described to me from cotton merchants that, their mill customers are essentially they're overbought because they're underdelivered, which hopefully that situation is improving. If you look at the weekly cotton shipments, they were flat and at a low level, subpar level for half of the marketing year, and now they've picked up. And hopefully that's the result of more availability of everything you need, trucks and containers and boats, boat space. So, but the flip side of that is if these mills are overbought, then at some point they may get everything they need, in which case there may be a lull in the rather decent export sales that we've been seeing for the last month or so.